This is the Poetry in Motion podcast on the Blood Red Channel with Neil Fitzmaurice, bringing you all the big news and even bigger views on Liverpool FC.
Hello and welcome to the, penultimate for the season, I would imagine, Poetry in Motion with me, Neil Fitz, as Liverpool ends a, hard fought, but ultimately frustrating campaign by their standards. I am joined by two of the big hitters to just sign off the season with. Thank you very much for giving up your time, guys. Theo Squires is here. Hiya, Theo.
Hi, Fitzy.
How you doing, pal?
Yeah, would be a bit better if the top four dream wasn't... I suppose it's still alive at the moment, just about, but it'll be dead by the time some people are listening to this. It'd be better if it was still on, wouldn't it, if we're going to the last day.
Well, I think Gandalf and Carol Vorderman couldn't work out these maths in our favour. But hey, you never know. Joe Rimmer is with me. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm all right, and I'm all right about the Europa League. I've made my peace with it, and I'm looking forward to a potential Dublin final that you can't stop talking about. So,
and also, domestically, the only trophy that Klopp hasn't won, it was Liverpool. So,
yeah, I mean, be good to put right the 2016 wrongs, I suppose. That's looking at it with a positive frame of mind, anyway.
Absolutely. One game to go. Southampton, of course. Liverpool currently sitting fifth in the league, 37 points played and 66 points. United have a game in hand and are on 69 points. Newcastle are on 70. So not we can do about Newcastle. United are the possible ones who could slip up, but to slip up twice. I think they're both at home, aren't they? Are both United's games home?
Yeah. Yeah, Chelsea then Fulham.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it sums up the season really when you think Fulham might have a chance. Not sure about Chelsea, mate. comes in all offers. It all started in Fulham, really, didn't it? It all started with that away game. Did that end up a 2-2 draw there?
Yeah.
Very, very hard fought one. The first time we kind of looked and thought, oh, these aren't as sharp as they were the other week. And then that seemed to be the case of things, really, didn't it? What do you put it down to then? I'm going to ask you both. What do you put it down over the mire of the season and what's happened? Obviously, we've got injuries. I'll let you guys talk down. I'll start with you, Theo. In pure, you know, dissertation style.
The season we've just had, discuss. They've been playing catch-up, haven't they, since the very beginning? Like, they decided last summer not to sign a midfielder, and we can talk about this all day long, whether it was the right or wrong decision. Club sources at the time were saying it will be judged on the pitch, our whole past policy, our transfer stance. Well, I suppose a year on, we can now judge it on the pitch and say, yeah, it was the wrong decision. Liverpool should have strengthened midfield last year. But they had so many options that just nearly won a quadruple. You can understand why they wanted to go with what they had, but then they lost, what was it, five of the midfielders to injury before they even got to the end of August. So that's bringing Artur Melo, and they've just been playing catch up ever since. Just by the players that have been fit, they've had to play too much, so then they get injuries, and then you're rushing the ones who are already injured back, and it just feels like there's never really been that depth in the squad, and they're dropping points, weren't playing well, they didn't have the energy because they're all knackered, having had a mid-season World Cup, not a long enough pre-season, a really intense season last year. And then it's only when they get limited and eliminated out of the Champions League and they get players back from injury, they start to look like themselves again in the last few weeks. Now, those are just excuses, aren't they? Like, at the same time, Liverpool should have planned better for this season. There should have been a way that they could have avoided some of these injuries or brought in enough bodies to get around it. They gambled on what we've got is enough to get us through another year, and it just wasn't. They've been great for the past, 6 weeks, 7 weeks in this new change of formation. We've seen the best of Trent in this new inverted role. Salah's still putting another 30 goal season, so there are still positives there, but it still feels like a massive waste of time for what they could have done if they had taken those next steps. Like, they missed out on Jude Bellingham. They might be missing out on more targets here. You're seeing them linked with players that they were linked with 12 months ago. It's like, just go back a year and make different decisions. Maybe we'd all be a little bit happy about the season as it's coming to an end. At the very least, you hope Liverpool can take lessons from it, but yeah, it has been a disappointing season all round, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe, you know, we had this problem. We had this issue two seasons ago, didn't we? We had the centre-back issue that really very nearly came unstuck. And then it just drifted down that road again. It's it's hard not to feel that there's a lack of ambition higher up the ranks, isn't it? It's hard not to see that there hasn't been enough forward planning. There seems to have been, you know, quite a lot of personnel changes and stuff. It's a restructuring, and we're going to have to hope that it's a restructuring that Liverpool get the benefit from, Joe, for next season.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help but feel that this season and that one you just mentioned, the two wasted seasons, really, in what has been a glittering era. But, you know, you look through those two seasons and they're just glaringly obvious parts of the team where they weren't touched, the centre-halves that year, midfield this year. And I just think I wish they would take more chances. You know, they missed out on Tchouaméni last summer. And then, you know, it just, they always seem to try and be the most sensible people in the room and go, you know what, we'll wait a year and get who we want. But it doesn't always work like that. And they've waited a year and not got who they really wanted. And they might be scrambling around for third or fourth choice targets now. So it's frustrating that. And I think Klopp found it frustrating because the first year I've seen him hint really one or two things about the ownership or the hierarchy of the club, that he's not happy that they don't take chances. So, I mean, I think this summer they're going to have to take some, but perhaps not the ones they wanted to. So, yeah, I mean, this season's been like a combination of everything, hasn't it? I just had a look back where you were talking at the early season fixtures, because I kind of blocked that all out. But, you know, I'm a big believer in momentum, and I think when you start the season with... I didn't think they were that bad at Fulham. Looking back at that game, or, you know, the draw, they had chances. Fulham just sort of felt like they had that early season bounce. So they draw there, then the Palace draw, and then losing away at United. And, you know, that's three games gone into the season and you've not won one of them. And I think Liverpool, sometimes the way they are, allow that to build. And yeah, they never really got themselves back going, did they? And injuries, we've talked about at length, obviously, midfield signings, and just it's been setback at setback, and just losing some really, really bad games, Leeds at home, and you know, others like that. Yeah, Nottingham Forest away, drawing with Palace at home, Bournemouth away, just really annoying results in previous years that they've gone and won those games. Because now you can lose at Old Trafford, you can lose at the Emirates, you can sometimes be outplayed, but some of the scrappy ones that they've lost has been really frustrating. So it's annoying that they're missing out on the Champions League, because then they've gone and get put together this run, which kind of reminds you how good they can be. And I'm still convinced, I've said on the pods in the last couple of weeks, I'm still convinced that they'll be City's closest challengers next season, because I don't think any other team is capable of putting together the runs that Liverpool can put together when they do it. But yeah, you look at some of those results, Leeds at home, and just think they're going to miss out the Champions League by a point, and they lost at home to Leeds United, who look like they're going to go down, and it just have been awful. So it's a frustrating one. I just hope that, like, you can take the positives. You know, talk about Dublin, I'm only half joking. I still think that's a positive to take into next season. Try and aim for that, and try and buy one or two players that perhaps are going under the radar and bounce back. And I think they will. I think they will. I'm quite confident about next season already, with a good summer behind them and with a couple of good signings and with the bit between their teeth. I think they can bounce back.
You know, the two Chelsea draws are probably two of the worst ones for me, because it seems like every week they get battered by another new team. It's like, well, why couldn't Liverpool do that? Those would have been the points they needed. And we're talking about all these frustrating results. Liverpool did the double over Newcastle. They got the head-to-head superior record over United courtesy of that 7-0 win, and it's still not going to be enough. That shows deeper down all the issues they've had this season.
Yeah, it's often been the case, hasn't it, where, you know, Liverpool have sort of swept aside the lower clubs and found it difficult to live with the big boys. But over recent years, of course, we haven't done that. We've done both. We've been able to sweep aside and have been able to live with the big boys. This season, we still held our heads up high against the big boys. It was them little clubs. We didn't like being pressed. We didn't have the energy to do anything with the press. Our passing was slow and stuff. And it was that age-old thing again. In fact, Villa did it very nicely at the weekend. That age-old thing of, well, we're going to get loads of people behind the ball, give you most of the possession. Let's see what you can try and do with it. We'll hit you on the counter. Big difference being, of course, the high line, Theo, didn't have the energy that it had to cover its back, did it? And while we had Trent doing this role that we knew he would wander in previous seasons, but this season seemed to be a very, very specific role for him, didn't it, to float out of his right-back position and float into centre-mid. And it still wasn't fully handled. When it worked, it worked, and he became incredibly creative. But when it didn't, we saw it again against Villa, a goal over the top, back stick. He's not really concentrating on who's behind him. And they slot one in. So when teams did that thing, it was the old plan B we used to talk about, didn't we? We still don't really have a plan B. I think the best attempt, the best player to try and utilise a plan B was Poppy Firmino, ironically, because he used to float into places that was hard for them to keep their line. So they would have to draw players out to try and cover them. We're going to lose that now. Gakpo has impressed me massively, but we're going to lose the style of finesse and we're going to lose the brain of Bobby Firmino. But it's those teams, isn't it, Theo, that sort of go, right, try and break us down. The other teams seem to be able to break down and people seem to struggle to do.
I think Ancelotti said it, didn't he, after the Champions League final, that Liverpool are predictable in how they're going to play, that they want to make use of those spaces in behind you and they're going to leave gaps themselves at the back. So it's like maybe Carlo Ancelotti's broken Liverpool here, because as soon as Real Madrid did it in that final, it felt like everyone's been able to do it since. Liverpool would throw more bodies forward when they were getting frustrated in games, but it was just that passive side-to-side passing. And as you said, as soon as they got pressed, lost possession, or they were second to the second balls, never mind the first ones, and they just left the massive gaps in behind, so much space in behind. And you got Trent in no man's land. You've got a right centre-back trying to cover two positions at once. Fabinho just not able to run anymore, chasing shadows, picking up bookings galore. It's like so many gaps there, and it's so easy for these opposing teams to pick Liverpool off that way. At least in recent weeks, when they've had Trent in this new role, they've seemed to have a better understanding of what's required. Like Fabinho doesn't have to cover as much ground because he's now got that player next to him as a number six. Kanate's actually got the pace to cover that right side of the pitch. Still some holes there, some gaps, but they've managed it a lot better. The concern there is as soon as you lose one of those players to injury, who comes in? Like we've seen that earlier in the season when Van Dijk was injured, or when Kanate was injured, but Matip wasn't really having his best season. Joe Gomez was so low on confidence. But like these are weaknesses Liverpool have had for a long time. Like there was still a way you could expose them when they're at their absolute best, but they still had Fabinho, who was like two players, Van Dijk, who was like two players, so it could counter that, it could cover that. And then Alisson saving so many goals. So this is something else they need to address. They need to make sure they've got the depth, they've got players in the starting 11 who are actually at the best of their abilities, and they can just counter for their weaknesses. And it's not just a case of a team sitting deep, we're not going to score, and then they're going to hit us on the counter and get away with a scrappy 1-0.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
Yeah, it's interesting, Joe. You mentioned it as well before. Liverpool have had chances in every game, haven't they, really? They just haven't converted them chances. There's definitely a confidence dip. There's no doubt about that. I don't care how much money you're on. Your body doesn't know how much money you're on. Your body knows confidence and your body knows not to be confident. There were a lot of chip players in that team who dipped in confidence, and that centre midfield area really struggled. Ironically, I think the poor season turned on the efforts of two youngsters, didn't he, really? And Stefan Pasetic and latterly Curtis Jones, who seems to have had a new lease of life. I think he's had a little bit of time, obviously, whilst he was injured, to look at the kind of role that he's meant to be playing in that team. And he's come into it, and he seems to give a bit of relief to Fabinho to be able to take that bit longer on the ball. And it seems to steady the ship a little bit, Joe. So it's the youngsters really coming to the rescue, isn't it? And not the multi-million pound players, but the ones that we already had that seem to be coming to the rescue for us.
Yeah. I mean, it's another parallel, isn't it, with that season in 2021. And I do find one thing odd about Klopp, in the sense that in 2021 he sort of tried everyone at centre half before he tried Reece Williams and Nat Phillips, and that was the combination that sort of settled Liverpool down and got them moving back up the league. And this season, I know Jones has had his injuries, but I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying that he came back from injury and wasn't even in the Liverpool squad for a good handful of games before he just dropped straight back into the lineup and hasn't come out of it since. And you know, maybe Klopp was just playing the long game with him, trying to get him fully fit before he got him playing football again. But it did seem odd that he didn't seem that keen on him and then brings him back in. And now you probably look at Curtis Jones just saying he's one of the people that will be featuring next season. Ditto Basic. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's been great. And I think in terms of Fabinho, I've always I'm less worried about him than I am others, because I kind of always think that Fabinho needs legs around him. And I think what we've seen with him previously is him trying to sort of cover for others and then getting caught out of position. And usually Fabinho, positionally, is very good, isn't he? And he seems to time things quite well. And now he has legs around him again. I think he's starting to improve. So hopefully with a couple of signings, Fabinho can be better and back to his best next season. But yeah, what I think they just need is people who are reliable, people who stay fit. What you know, Curtis Jones has been good, but he stayed fit. He stayed fit for probably the longest run of games in the last several years that he's played for Liverpool. So they need more players that do that, because in the last few years, in midfield especially, they've got too many people who come in, play two, get injured, and we start again. And we've seen that with Thiago, Keita, Oxlade, Henderson, Milner. The list goes on, doesn't it, of injury-prone players. So, you know, if they're going after McAllister, one good thing about him is he seems to have played all season for Brighton, played in the World Cup. Touchwood doesn't seem to have had many injury problems. And hopefully that's the type of player they're going for, because they just need consistency. And I think that about Klopp midfield. I don't think necessarily, they obviously have to be disciplined and good at, you know, tactical stuff. But the main thing about them is they need to be physically good and they need to be fit. Because, you know, the forward line is brilliant, and the back line it's got good players in it as well. So I just think with the midfield, they need to be fit. They need to be able to be good tactically, and hopefully they can do that next year.
Need the next Gini Wijnaldum.
But that's it. But Gini Wijnaldum wasn't like this. I mean, he was better than he got credit for, perhaps technique-wise, but he was strong on the ball, wasn't he? He was fit. He got around the pitch. He used it quite simply. But I don't think you wouldn't. You look what he's happened to him since. You can't just stick him in another team and he performs as well. And certain players fit the ball, don't they? And he fit in perfectly.
It is that kind of player we need. We kind of need that strong midfield player. I mean, ultimately, one of the worst things that's come out of this season for me is the Jude Bellingham saga. And, you know, we've gone on about this the season before. He's been loaded with us before. He's been wined and dined and potentially going to play, and then when it got to it, it was all a bit embarrassing, really, wasn't it? And there are still some people saying, "Oh, Jude Bellingham thing isn't over yet." And if Real Madrid don't go on for him, it's likely they will, since they got an absolute spanking at Man City, and the midfield were absolutely atrocious for the first time, weren't they, in a while, and showing signs of decay. So it is likely that Bellingham would fit the Real Madrid bill when it comes to that. But you know, even with what was happening with us during this season, Theo, it was the lack of prevention that really annoyed me. It was the fact that when a transfer window opened, and we don't know the politics of a transfer window, we don't know how difficult it becomes and what the implications are for trying to get a player. But when you've got the hole in your boat, you need to try and plug it, don't you? Other teams have shown that's what you've got to do at times. There has to be some sort of emergency funding to say, okay, things aren't working here. It's probably not going to turn around in time, so get someone. And I think it was that transfer when the winner, when Arthur Melo arrived at, you know, 25-7 on a train from Runcorn or something, bananas like that, that you realised that we'd been hung out to dry a little bit by the owners here, hadn't we? And that must have been a very frustrating time for Klopp, because he more than anyone must have known the kind of things we needed to try and stop and the kind of things we needed to improve on, and wasn't given any money to do that.
Well, it was strange with Arthur Melo, because he wasn't even supposed to be the first choice target from Juventus for the emergency signings. It was the Swiss lad Zachariah who they called up, and only to be told he was already going to Chelsea, if you listen to the reports. And it's like, oh, he'll do. He's better than no one. Now we're at the end of the season. He's played 13 minutes. Like Klopp and Henderson came out on programme notes at the weekend saying how good he is, how talented he is. So we've not seen him. Like, fair enough, you focus on your future. I would much rather see Curtis Jones in that starting 11, putting in the performances he's doing, than them throwing in Arthur Melo when you know you're not signing permanently. But the fact that he was brought in as this emergency signing, having not been great at Barca, having not been great at Juventus, it was a gamble, and it was a desperate gamble. It was like when Rodgers brought in Balotelli, like they've got nowhere left to turn. But at least Rodgers was actually looking to sign players. Like, he tried to get Sanchez, he tried to get Remy, Samuel Eto'o was on the radar. Whereas Liverpool just said, "Ah, we didn't get Tchouaméni. Bellingham's not available. We'll wait a year. We've still got all these players." I've said before, you can understand the logic, their reasoning, and why they stuck with what they had, because no one saw Henderson dropping off like he did. No one saw Fabinho dropping off like he did. Keita had just had the best season of his Liverpool career, and he's a player who's had injuries at Anfield, but he stayed fit earlier in his career. Harvey Elliott was the dreaded cliche, like a new signing. Pesetic had a really good pre-season. Thiago, he's someone who's always had injuries, but you afford him as that luxury player. If you can get him in fit for two-thirds of the season, you've got a quality player for two-thirds of the season. But as I said earlier, they lost five players to injury straight away, and then there's just no quality left in that midfield. They did need a big one like Bellingham. It feels like massive, I don't know, mismanagement from them somehow. Like, if you wait a year for a player, you're banging your drum. There are those flirtations there. It seemed like it was on. You know he's going to cost ludicrous amounts of money. You know it's going to be a club record fee. You know he's going to cost big wages. So if you're thinking you can afford them, then surely you've got to fit it into the book somehow. You can't go, oh, wait, we need three midfielders, not one. Because Liverpool will still come into this season where three, four players are out of contract. They're going to need more than just that one midfielder. It only takes one injury, your options are even more depleted. It's just a case of Liverpool spinning so many plates again, gambling, and it not paying off. And that has happened a few times now in recent years. They'll say they have to make these gambles. They don't have the riches of a City or a Newcastle. They've got to be careful. Like, they have revamped the attack quite successfully over the last 18 months. And you can understand why they don't want to do everything at once. But it has left them with egg on their faces now. And we'll all look at Jude Bellingham. We'll just be glad that he's not playing in the Premier League. If he's going to a Man City, that's a real kick, isn't it? That's a sickener. At least it's Real Madrid. You can stomach that one a little bit more. But it's a missed opportunity, something that was felt within the grasp, only to be stolen away. Like, if Liverpool had a year ago just gone for someone else and it wasn't feeling like they're going to get him, you can sort of accept that. The same way fans have accepted Mbappe's not realistic, just can't afford him. But it was built up as a Liverpool future transfer that was going to happen, and only to be wrestled away when the reality became clear.
Yeah, it is a mad one, Joe, because, you know, people are saying, oh, a lot of money, but you know, the age that kid is, you could get 8-9 seasons out of him before he's hit his peak. He's 19, 10 and 20, isn't he? I mean, he's the closest thing to a Steven Gerrard I've ever seen in that galloping, you know, dynamic, getting forward, but also weighing in at the back as well. And you just think, you know, it's just solo. We don't want to spaff all our money on one player when we could buy three players. Well, no, spaff all your money on that one player and then get another couple of players, because unless you can see what the teams around you are doing, you're immediately looking at dropping down at the pecking order when it comes to the league. Arsenal have just proved beautifully how incredible Liverpool are, because they couldn't even sustain it for one season. You know, their tank ran out 6-7 games ago. Liverpool did this for three seasons, pushing City all the way, and made City blow a load of money on players just to make sure they maintain the stranglehold. So it is a frustrating one, Joe, isn't it? One that it doesn't surprise us, unfortunately. But I mean, now I've just read today the Mason Mount thing, which I've never understood in a million years anyway. But he's just, hopefully, if the report is true, has just announced that he'd rather go to United than Liverpool, which just beautifully all the reasons why I wouldn't want to. No, but the fact that he was put in the mix, Conor Gallagher, Mason Mount, these players that aren't cheap, they're not going to be cheap, and they're nowhere near the levels that Liverpool need. So it's just been a strange smoke and mirrors type season, hasn't it, Joe, when it comes to potential new signings, and one that we'll just have to wait till the close season to find out what comes true.
Yeah, what I found a bit weird about, you know, Liverpool's sort of message that they needed several players this summer was, first of all, I think that was obvious last year. They tried to buy a midfielder last year, so they knew they needed one. I still think for a club that lets it be known that they plan very well, it's funny how they clearly didn't plan that well, did they, when it came to midfield, because you look what's happened this season. And again, the club that looks at every stat under the sun should also have looked at the stats that their players are barely ever fit. So I do think there's some issues with some of the narratives around how well Liverpool plan, but to be fair, I disagree with you. I quite like Mason Mount. I think he's all right, and I think as well, Liverpool need Theo's eyes will light up here, because he always talks about it. Liverpool need homegrown players, don't they? So I mean, I think that explains Conor Gallagher and others like that. But yeah, I mean. But I think this is what happens when you need three midfielders in one summer. then yeah, you're not going to get all the ones you want, and you're not even going to get all the ones that you want second on your list or third on your list, because you're going out trying to persuade three players to join Liverpool at a time when they're not in the Champions League, and you know Klopp can say, "Oh, I'm not interested in players who don't want to push it back into it." But the sad fact is that players want to be in the Champions League, don't they? They've always made that clear. So I find it it's going to be annoying if they miss out on players like Mount, because even though you might not like him, it means that they're probably going to have to look at a Gallagher, or even worse, because they're going to have to go after an English player, and Mount's probably the best one available, whose name isn't Jude Bellingham. So it's difficult. I want them to get McAllister. Again, there's some stuff this week that City could be interested in him. Looks like it's coming from the City end. I don't know whether they're just trying to maybe sort of disrupt things for Liverpool, but if they can get him over the line, I think that'd be great. But yeah, they're going to need an English one, and they're going to need a third one as well, because the amount of people that are departing. So it's going to be really interesting what they do, and they probably need a defender. They probably need a right back. Yeah, they're under a lot of pressure to get things right this summer. So we'll see whether they live up to their billing as this great club that doesn't get transfers wrong.
Well, when you compare it to the forwards, like they had to revamp the forward line. Like they had this untouchable trio of Mane, Salah and Firmino were all coming out of contract, wrong side of 30. And they've sort of quietly done it, if you think about it. Like Diaz came in January, Nunes in the summer, and then Gakpo in the January. So if you manage to bring in one big signing in three windows in a row, and like it's never really been a major issue there. Like there have been injuries, but they've still had quality forward options available. Why could they not have the same forward planning in the midfield? Why couldn't it be, I don't know, I'm not going to get Bellingham, not going to get Tchouaméni, but they could have gone for Mason Mount or whoever last year, or someone else in January, something like that, and spread it out. Then it's that gradual, someone gets 6 months to get adjusted to Liverpool, then you bring in the next one, then you get the next one, and it's just that constant success of what you're doing. You're getting used to the football, you're getting tuned up to it, and then you can go again. Whereas if Liverpool are going to have to rebuild their entire midfield now in the space of a few weeks, when they've not missed out on just the first choice, they could miss out on the second choice, the third choice, and who knows who's the fourth, fifth choice here. You're relying on Curtis Jones to stay fit, just to give him a bit of balance, Firmino not to drop off again, and Trent to, I suppose, if he carries on in this midfield role, be as great as he is. It's just a very bizarre scenario, as Joe said, for a team that's supposed to be so good at forward thinking and planning, to do it all in one summer when it is that heartbeat of your side is very strange.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
Well, it is. It's a ripple effect, isn't it? You allow yourself to things to get out of control, and the ripple effect takes over, and then you are suddenly three or four, five players light. I mean, the right back situation is an interesting one, because does he sacrifice a midfield place for Trent to play in midfield? But because the only alternative is to get a right back in. If he's going to do that, you get a right back in, because this floating into midfield and allowing Canate to pick up all the slack on that right-hand side, it's just not going to work, is it? Because teams are just banging balls over the top. There's too much room. When he goes in midfield, he can be very creative. But it's you saw it against Villa. You know, they exposed it every time he moved. And so really speaking, the stability of a right-back's the only thing that's going to do that, because Trent can't be expected to belt forward and belt back to beat the ball. So that is an interesting headache that I don't particularly want to have, and unfortunately Klopp does. But I mean, looking at the Villa game, they did that, didn't they? They just all sat behind the ball. They waited for us to push that high line up, and then they knocked it over the top. Some good homegrown players. I mean, John McGrillis is it? He's a great player, isn't he? For Villa,
John McGinn.
He's a busy player. He's a tough player in midfield, a homegrown player. I know they were talking about telephone numbers for him as well. And I tell you, I also quite like is Barella, who plays for Milan. He was superb in both those Milan games. He's a great player. We've been linked with him in the past, but again, you get the feeling that a lot of that is just headlines, isn't it? But certainly needs someone in that. Someone, and McAllister, I think, is the ideal fit, isn't he? But if he goes to City, they're replacing Gundogan, aren't they? Or is he just decides?
Bernardo Silva, potentially, as well.
I think I read somewhere that Gundogan's possibly going to sign another extension, but what a player he is.
What
to play, they want to miss it be. And it'd be just like them to just go, well, we'll just hijack a player that we need to just fill in that role. A very, very strange situation to be in. Talking about the Villa game, it was a real dip for Liverpool, wasn't it, considering the run they'd been on, Joe? It was a tight half that Villa managed. But a lot of the sparkle that we'd had in the previous eight games just didn't seem to be there, did it?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of them, isn't it? They've won what they won in a row? Eighth in the row?
I think they've won in a row, seven wins, are they?
Okay, so yeah, I kind of think you're expecting one drop off. And Villa have been playing well, so it was one of those frustrating home games where I think if one or two things had gone Liverpool's way in the first half, they got the lead, but they didn't, then Villa take it and they just dig in. And like you say, the time wasting was, you know, sort of, I mean, as much as I've seen all season, probably with the exception of Newcastle. And they just dug in Villa and played pretty well, didn't they? Made things frustrating. So it was tough. I think Liverpool would have gone to win it if they'd scored just a touch in earlier. So I don't know. I kind of think you expect games like that. I'm not really surprised. I do think you've got a point about, I quite like the Trent right back sort of into midfield experiment, but I do think it's one of those ones that teams will figure out. And I think buying a right back will give them options to either move him fully into midfield when they want, play him at right back into midfield, or just play him as a right back. It gives you those three options. And for example, against Villa, if they had a decent right back, they could have just brought on a right back, pushed Trent into midfield, or dropped him back. So I think that would give them options. I wasn't too worried. I think Liverpool are always going to run out of steam a little bit in terms of, you know, when Newcastle and United didn't drop points, I think that Champions League spot was getting away from them. But yeah, the time wasting thing is it's a funny one, because we talked about it on the other pod and I was hosting, so I didn't say too much about it, but I do get frustrated with it because I just think I understand it, and I think every team does it. And you know, Liverpool 1-0 up in a European Cup final with 2 minutes to go, you'd be cheering if the players were taking half a minute to take a throw in, or I don't know, you know, the goalkeeper was messing around with his goal kicks. But you see teams doing it from like the third minute at Anfield, and I just think they need to have better punishments and better ways to sort of combat it, because I think quite often you see a goalkeeper get a booking in like the 85th minute after his time wasted all game, and he just goes, well, so what, you know, I'll take the booking. It's worth it. And I would like to see, you know, they added a lot of time onto that game, but they definitely could have added more on, because the amount of time players were legitimately or not down injured was probably beyond what they added on, which was like 19 minutes. So I think they need to sort of get wise and get harder with some of the time wasting that goes on, and punish players a little bit more harshly, because the Villa just were spoiling from the word go, and they did kind of spoil it for Liverpool.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, there's 100 minutes, over 100 minutes played in Anfield. There was apparently 56 minutes of ball on pitch football without stoppages. And when you think about that, it's just unbelievable, isn't it? And it'd be quite simple, wouldn't it, for a referee to book a goalkeeper in the first half and then simply say to him at the start, if that happens again, you're going off. The first goalkeeper to get sent off for time wasting would stop time wasting, wouldn't it? It would certainly stop time wasting from a goalkeeper's point of view, because that completely, you know, knackers up the teams. You've got your second string goalkeeper in goal then.
I think we mentioned as well on the pod the other day, more, do you remember when Mignolet was held onto the ball too long and they got an indirect free kick and scored? I think they gave more indirect free kicks for time wasting. It would make goalkeepers think twice, because they couldn't time waste too long in their own box, because then they could potentially concede the goal. So, and the same with defenders. It would just make things a little bit, it would even things up a little bit, but I suppose it's a difficult one.
Well, I mean, I'm still trying to get my head around the Gakpo disallowed goal, because it wasn't intentionally. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life, that the Aston Villa player touches the ball, but did he touch it intentionally or not? Well, what does that matter? If you've altered the course of a ball, of the flight of a ball, whether it's touched you on the leg or you've went to hit it and it's gone, and it's so pedantic to say that goal doesn't count because Van Dijk was offside, because the Aston Villa defender didn't mean to knock the ball. I mean, it's just phenomenal, Theo, isn't it?
No, I understand that the rules have tweaked so they can give this, whether it's deliberate or not, because this is a really obscure goal I've always remembered. But it was like Middlesbrough in the mid-noughties when Liverpool punt a ball down the right-hand side that the left-back tries to head it away and gets his header completely wrong and basically just flicks onto Morientes, who's in the centre of the pitch, miles offside, but he's one-on-one, he scores, and Liverpool win 2-0. So like in that sort of circumstance, you can understand why the rule changed to whether it's deliberate or not. But it's a big difference between you're on the flank and you have completely messed it up like that, or you're a defender in the six-yard box trying to clear a ball and you've just shanked it a little bit. It's not as though he's facing the wrong way and it's hit him on the back of the head. He has made a deliberate attempt to play that ball and he's got it wrong with what he's done. And Van Dijk, yeah, he's offside, but he's able to pounce. And it's like, you're in the six-yard box. Whether Van Dijk is there or not, you are going to try and clear that ball. If you don't, the player behind you is probably going to score. So Aston Villa got away with one there. And the officials come out and say, well, this is what the official wording says in the rule book. It's the right decision. They all support their man. Well, fair enough. If that's what the rules say at the moment, then you need to tweak it, because all football fans want to see benefit of the doubt for the offensive players. Everyone watching that was thinking, what's wrong there? That should be a goal. The defenders made a mistake. Liverpool have scored from it. There is nothing wrong with that. This is what fans want to see. Any fan of the team that scores that goal and has it disallowed is furious that it's disallowed. Any fan of a team that has conceded that goal and has got lucky because it's disallowed just thinking, yeah, we've got away with one there. So you give the benefit of the doubt to the offensive players because you want to see goals. So it's either change the rules or have some clarity in there, because I came out and said, well, it's a subjective decision. And Klopp said, well, I think it's deliberate. The official thought it wasn't. And that's the end of it. It's like, well, it needs a bit more clarity there. Like the fact he's gone to check the monitor as well means the VAR weren't sure which way to go either. So it's just one person makes a decision and everyone inside Anfield disagreed with it. And from what we're hearing this week, quite a lot of the footballing world in England at least disagree with it as well.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I don't know whether it's sort of just being paranoid, but since Klopp had his little outburst about Paul Tierney, apart from the fact that he got fined more than Ivan Toney did for 60-odd breaches of gambling regulations, he got a £50,000 fine and Klopp got a £75,000 fine for showing his frustration at a referee. It just seems that the refereeing's gone worse, particularly at Anfield and particularly against Liverpool. I mean, some of them decisions against Villa were absolutely ridiculous. You know, shirts being pulled and little tugs here and they're getting away with it and we're not getting anything. It just seems like a really frustrating time, doesn't it?
It does. It's one of them, you know. I don't always buy into referee conspiracies, but I did find that decision odd, you know, that he got sent to the monitor. Just thought, like, the player tries to play the ball and sends it the wrong way, or doesn't get enough on it, so it doesn't go out. You know, I think he's trying to put it out for a corner. He doesn't do it well enough, and it goes to Van Dijk. So therefore, he should pay for it, shouldn't he? So I don't know. I just think that was poor. Obviously, the Tottenham game was a bit mad, but yeah, I just think it's one of them. You know, it's one of those seasons where things haven't gone for us, and they always seem to get worse and worse, don't they, when they don't. So I think Liverpool will, if they're better, they'll create their own luck. And I think we'll see them improve and perhaps get the rub of the green a bit more next season, because this year there isn't, you know, if you score a winner, we're not talking about that decision, are we, really? You know, the Tottenham stuff didn't really bother us as much because they scored the winner. So it's one of them. I don't like to dwell too much on it, but yeah, some of the referee decisions have been slightly odd.
Well, a couple of things to mention for the Aston Villa game, of course, the last game at home, so we pretty much said goodbye to four players, didn't we? But also, we have to mention the 7 minutes applause for Dan, a colleague of ours, a colleague of you guys mostly. Someone I knew for about 5 years, really, since starting these pods. I know Joe was my first and most frequent guest with Neil Jones when we started these pods. But then Dan come along, and we were there Friday, obviously last Friday for his funeral. And I've said it on a previous podcast with Pete, but people like him don't come along very often. And it was a wonderful tribute to know, and something that he would have absolutely loved, isn't it? Something to have. He was a very quiet, very, unassuming man, very funny lad. Didn't put himself first in any circumstance whatsoever, but he would have had a smile on his face, wouldn't he? When it's on the TV, it cuts to a picture of a banner with Dan written on it and all the people applauding. It's the ultimate for a Liverpool fan, isn't it? He was a massive Liverpool fan, Theo, and it was just a very touching moment to start the game.
It's been so many touching moments since the sad news, and it says a lot about Dan as a person. Like, there is such an outpouring of love. Like, there were so many people at his funeral, and so many people wanted to pay tribute to him, shed their stories of him. People that didn't even know him personally but have been listening to these podcasts or read his work. He was a superb ambassador for us as a company, for the city, for Liverpool Football Club, for like Everton and Tranmere as well. He's done so much for like the Hillsborough families. And it's so sad that he's no longer with us. But you'd like to think he knew how much he was loved. Like even the banner itself, you take a proper look at it. Some of the details on it are stunning, aren't they? Like, it's covered his life really well for what is a really simple banner. And like, he's so proud of Liverpool as a club, Liverpool as a city. We went out to the Eurovision village after his funeral, and it's like he'd have loved to have been part of that, just getting in the atmosphere and celebrating Liverpool as a city as the whole of Europe was watching. Sadly, no like silverware, Liverpool competing at the best stage of European football this year. But he'd have loved a trip to Dublin for the final next year. And he's really badly missed. There have been so many moments, like just in the office, where you think, oh, I need to check something. Oh, I could have asked Dan that. And this is going to be the case for years and years and years to come. But he's got his legacy, doesn't he? He's done so much, as I said, for this company, for the city as a whole, for so many people. He's touched so many lives. And the fact that he didn't have any direct family, but everyone feels like he was part of the family. That's perfect tribute to his memory will live on.
Yeah, he's part of a massive family. And Joe, it was lovely that it was number seven as well. The seventh minute, his hero was Kenny. And it's just very fitting. You know, it was after that seventh minute, I think I didn't really care what happened with the game, I'll be honest with you. It was just such an incredible tribute in there. And I know you feel the same as Theo, mate. It's been a shocking thing that will take us a long time to deal with and get over, mate.
Yeah, it was devastating. And I don't think Dan would have believed it if you'd have told him that Anfield would have you know, applauded for him and given him the tribute that it did. And you know, he got a mention on Match of the Day, and you know, the outpouring of emotion, of support. It's been incredible. The club have been absolutely amazing. Really has, you know, sort of, I can't put the words together, but it's made me really, really happy to see the way the club have responded and given their support, not just with the clap and the banner and everything like that, but just personally and behind the scenes, and just, you know, little classy touches that I think meant a lot to a lot of people. So Dan was massively loved. Yeah, I'm sorry, I just don't really have the words, but I miss him a lot. Can't really believe he's gone, and I don't really have the words. I'm sorry.
That's all right, mate. Totally understandable. Well, listen, we'll move on. We all love Dan. We always will.
Poetry in Motion on the Blood Red Channel.
We did lose some players as well, of course. James Milner, who has been an absolute legend at the club. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who more than did his bit. Unfortunately, injury, I had something to say about that, and think that you can clearly talk about Naby Keita in that same thing. If they do a mural, I've said this in the pod I did with Peter Hooton, if they did a mural of Naby Keita, it'd just be a treatment bench on a wall, wouldn't it? But I suppose the one that really got us all was Bobby, wasn't it? Bobby Firmino leaving was a huge, especially after coming on and scoring and pretty much doing what he did so much for Liverpool Football Club. And you know what? It's such a fitting tribute to the club and to him to see. I don't know whether you've seen and I'm sure you guys will know that there's footage around of him, the boxes that he left for 200 members of staff and behind the scenes, kitchen staff, football and players, these beautiful kind of Firmino boxes with a signed shirt and the perfume or the aftershave and a little kind of trail of photographs of the story. I feel players like that come along and it's a family, isn't it? It exceeds football clubs, doesn't it? I remember being told a long time ago with a little name drop, Ray Houghton saying to me, once you join Liverpool, you never join any other club. It's in your blood. It means far more than just a football team. And I think that footage of Bobby Firmino leaving all those presents just sums up the kind of when a balance is right, Theo, with a player and a club and a fan base that just all get each other. And he felt compelled to leave a thank you to so many people. Just a remarkable man, wasn't he?
Yes. He's a club legend. Like, he's been central to so much of this success, and he's lived a lifetime here, hasn't he? Like Klopp said it in his press conference, that when he joined, like, his kids were, that they even weren't born, they were babies. So he's like grown up a whole life, and Liverpool is a part of them. Like, it will be the latest Liverpool player to go, my kids are Scousers. But yeah, he's so central to the transformation on the pitch as that false nine, getting the best out of every single player around him. He was born to entertain. I think he's probably deep down, we don't have too many favourites, do we? Because they're all legends. They've all won absolutely everything. But everyone has got that extra warm bit of affection for Bobby. Like the fact that Michael Edwards comes and says, I don't have a favourite signing, but my dog's called Bobby. That says it all. I think we all feel something similar to that. Like, he scored so many important goals, so many assists, so many moments where you just go, wow, how's he done that? And he perhaps didn't get the credit he deserved at times because Salah was stealing headlines, Mane was stealing headlines, and he went a little bit under the radar. And then he was got a little bit older, he declined a little bit sooner in terms of he wasn't getting 20, 30 goals. Well, those were, Jota came in, Nunes, Gakpo, Diaz. But this season, when he's been available, he still stepped up with some big goals and some big moments. And I don't think any of us are ready for him to leave. Like, we've all been happy for him to come and be a squad player for another couple of years if he wanted to, but he's still got a chance to be first choice elsewhere. He hinted that he could return one day, so who knows, maybe we'll do a Drogba. We'll see him come back to just be a sub for a season in a few years, because Liverpool's been a big part of his family's life, his life. Like, if you saw them during the lap of honour, the family, like his parents, I'm not sure who the rest of the relatives were, but along with his kids, they're holding up the gifts he got from the club and showing it to the fans. They've made up their own little flags, you know, waving it around. Liverpool was a huge part of their life, the same as they've been a huge part of every fan's and Liverpool's life. And it'll be a big miss for them. I'm sure there've been plenty of tears at their little farewell, but that was another classy touch from him. He goes to see the mural himself the day after his final home game, spends all that time with fans just there. I'm not sure if he announced that he was going to that. Doyle, who stayed in the press box, I think, later than most on Saturday after the game. It's like Firmino was like the last man to leave the pitch, trying to sign as many pictures, post for as many photos as he could. He didn't want to leave Anfield. And we've seen some of the scenes from his send-off where they're all singing Si Senor to him, beaming smile, and these gifts he's left behind as well. Whenever he's next back at Liverpool, be it as an away player, playing for the Liverpool legends, or just in the stands because he fancies watching them one last time, he'll be welcomed back, wouldn't he, with the warmest of receptions. He is one of these big Liverpool legends. We've had a generation where we've not had too many world-class, elite, cream-of-the-crop legends, but Firmino is one of the first in this generation, and we'll never forget him. There's not going to be another one like him.
No, we're going to miss them teeth, Joe, aren't we? Beaming away. Karate kick celebrations and nearly take the other players' heads off. But just like, you know, like the old days when you had Bruce Grobbelaar messing around in between the sticks, you know, he just brought something, didn't he? Brought a charisma, he brought a panto, he brought style to what he did at Liverpool. And as well as, of course, being an absolute worldy footballer with an incredible brain.
That was it, wasn't it? You're on the money there with charisma. I just think he had something about him, didn't he? Everything from the teeth to the different haircuts to the style of play, you know, like, we can all remember the turns. You know, we talked about our favourite goals the other day, and, you know, I love that goal against Arsenal where he sort of dances through their defence, leaves them all on their backsides, and just slots it under the goalkeeper for a hat-trick. And
last-minute Wolves to PSG last minute. I mean, it's so
bad. This is bad. You didn't mention PSG on Friday. And you think the fact that he didn't start that game because he'd had the eye injury the day before, he was in doubt whether he could even be fit to play. He scores that in the last minute and then does that as the celebration. That sums him up perfectly.
Yeah, he was just a class act, wasn't he? And he had that because he didn't speak a lot. It sort of, again, sort of all fed into this like bit of a character and bit of a legend. So, yeah, great player. And just a word on Milner as well, who I think slightly unlucky to be going at the same time as Firmino because he's kind of sort of fade into the background a little bit, but what a player he's been for Liverpool. Free signing, probably the best that they've ever had, and incredible personality behind the scenes, just incredible work ethic, everything we want in what a player can be when they join in terms of their professionalism. Again, played his part in some massive moments, sometimes forgotten about in some of those moments as well. So yeah, obviously a key player when they won the Champions League in that season with all those assists. And just, you know, someone that bought into what Liverpool's about. And I think you don't always get players who do that. I think Milner, considering he'd been at some big clubs before he came to Liverpool and played his part in some big moments, you know, obviously won leagues with City, came to Liverpool. And now I think the biggest thing you could say about Milner is, you'll remember his club as Liverpool, won't you? Not as City, not as anyone else. It'll always be Liverpool. So fair play to him. And yeah, you know, Keita, Oxlade, well, you know, I think that a shame maybe with the way their careers have turned out in terms of injuries, but both played their part. And, you know, we should be thankful to anyone who's played their part and what has been a brilliant, brilliant era with great trips and great days out and some trophies as well. So fair play to them.
Well, it's easy to forget. He was like 30, wasn't he, when he joined the club? Like if you'd said that summer, oh, he's going to be here for 8 years, he's going to win the lot, people would have laughed at you. And he's essentially almost a replacement for Steven Gerrard. Like, I'm not saying anyone could ever replace him on the pitch, but we've lost our long-serving captain. We need a leader. We need an experienced midfielder. He can come in. He's going to be a leader. He's done it all at City. And yeah, he's delivered perfectly. He's done it his own way. And he is another loyal servant to the club. And as Joe said, Liverpool is his club. He said on Saturday, I didn't think when I joined that any club could touch me as much as this club has. Like you'd have thought Leeds, his boyhood side, that would have been the one. He had great stints at Villa and Man City, but he's another player you will just think Liverpool. He's been this vice-captain for 8 years. He might not have lifted any of the trophies himself, despite Henderson's best efforts, but he's been right at the centre of all the success, and it'll be a huge miss. And he's another one you can't wait to see him back at Anfield in some capacity one day, whether it's opposing player or hopefully soon as a coach, because he is vital behind the scenes and you want him to be back playing a role in some part in the not too distant future.
Yeah, if ever a man deserved a cheeky little of him, so it was him. All right, listen, last game of the season, Southampton. Couple of players. Well, I mean, listen, I'm going to throw a curveball at you there, but what about a little cheeky James Ward-Prowse on a cheap one?
I'd take him. Definitely, I'd take him.
I mean, the set pieces are phenomenal.
Yeah. And I think that having that sort of weapon in your squad is really good, isn't it? It's really handy. Can you imagine, like, late in the game, if you get a free kick and you can bring him off the bench or whatever? So I'd certainly take him. It depends how much they want for him. But with them going down, you'd like to think that they wouldn't be asking for too much. As Theo pointed out the other day to me, that he's played under Arsene Hoogle, who obviously was a big presser, wasn't he, in terms of his style of play, and as well he's homegrown as well, so he ticks a lot of boxes. I'd certainly take him. He'd be like your third midfield signing with a couple of others, definitely.
Well, they're talking about Lavio as well, aren't they? Romeo Lavio, is it, whatever his name is. He's a midfield player from Southampton. They're talking about very young lads as well. Could be the Liverpool way, Leo, couldn't it? Get a few.
They got enough Man City, I think. So Man City have got this buyback clause. I'm not sure if it's active this summer or next summer, but that means Southampton might. I think if it's next summer, Southampton have to try and cash in now to get a bit more for him. But he seems to have done quite well in his first season in regular Premier League football, despite the relegation. He's bit of a number six, isn't he? And he's certainly, when you go through their players, one that ticks a box, grabs your eye. But as he's such a young player in that holding midfield role. You could also argue Liverpool have already got one of their own just because he's been injured for a couple of months. Bacetic can tick that box easily, and he certainly impressed all of us when he got his chance earlier in the season. It just depends on the collective of what Liverpool can do in midfield. Like, we'll resign to the fact that they're probably not going to be able to find a way to go back in for Bellingham. That's done. Wait and see on McAllister and Mason Mount. It just depends what is the combination of names here. Like, if you could say they're going to get, say, a Barella, they're going to get McAllister, and then you've got Lavia or Ward-Prowse, everyone's happy with that. Mm-hmm. But if you're saying it's Gallagher, Tillemans on a free, and then one of them, everyone's going, oh, God, this is going to be a long season.
Yeah, tricky. Let's just buy nine, just the company. All right, listen, very, very quickly before I go, thanks for your company, guys. A results prediction for the last game of the season away to Southampton. What do you think, Theo?
Let's go 3-1 Liverpool. Southampton are down. Both sides will be on the beach.
I love the fact that we are still in that phase where, even though Arsene Becker has been the player of the season, we are still throwing a one in, aren't we? We're not overly confident. Joe?
Yeah, I'd say the same. Fancy them to go out on the high and Southampton are down. Yeah, I think 3-1 Liverpool.
Let's hope so. I'll go 3-0. Where's your faith in our keeper and our back four? All right, guys, listen, thanks very much. Yeah, it's always a pleasure to have you two on. And please come back soon and guest with us. And speak to you soon, Joe. Take care, pal.
Cheers. Thanks very much.
And Theo, I'll see you soon, pal.
Catch you a bit, Fizzy.
Thank you. That was Poetry in Motion. And from me, Neil Fitz, coming to the end of the season. But let's hope we can strengthen up and bounce back as the Liverpool we've known for the last couple of seasons. Enjoy yourselves, guys, and we'll see you. I'm not sure there's going to be any stuff going on during the close season. Maybe there will be. Hopefully will. I'll be speaking to you soon. So from me, Joe Rimmer, Theo Squires, and Dan Kay sitting up there on his cloud playing a little harp. We love you, Dan, and we'll see you all again soon. Take care.
You've been listening to the Poetry in Motion podcast on the Blood Red Channel.